The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I think fear is sometimes, you know, looked at differently. And I feel like a lot of people in that situation, they didn't have the right approach about that. And I'm kind of the person who don't really fear nothing at all, really. I mean, you can't live in fear in life. Some people take, sometimes it takes time to learn, how not to fear. You know, accept it, but don't fear. I feel like we all could have done a little bit better in that aspect.
That's Bears linebacker Danny Trevathan talking about having the courage to speak about social issues. And sounds to me, it feels like a dam broke. Something's different this time. We're seeing it, we're feeling it, and the young people are leading us. And I want to thank, before we bring in our next guest, I want to thank so many texters who, when I was mentioning the number of gatherings, rallies, and protests that have been in various small towns and municipalities, I was almost moved to tears just by seeing the number of people who also wanted to know, to tell me, St. John, Indiana, Elmhurst, Downers Grove, Palatine, Addison, Illinois, Buffalo Grove, Bloomington, Illinois, and everybody saying us too, our town too. And it was to see that on the text line in response to what I was saying was genuinely moving. And thank you for it. And thanks to so many young people. Thanks to the high school students, the junior high students, the grade school students, the college students. Thanks to so many kids who are driving this, because you're gonna pull us out of this, and you are gonna make it all better. I'm hopeful. You know, I've got an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old here, and I know them, and I know their friends, and I see it, and I see the positivity, and I see the energy, and the fact that it is so broad-based and so widespread that you young people might just redeem all of us awful older people. So thanks for the effort. It is certainly being noticed. Kevin Fishbane is on Twitter at KFishbane. He covers the Bears for The Athletic, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. What's going on, Kevin? How are you, man?
I'm good, Dan. You know, doing well, all things considered.
So yesterday seemed, for just going from some of the descriptions, just seeing what Hub Arkush wrote and others, that it had to be really emotional to listen in on what was something that was more than just football players talking about the sport.
Yeah, it was. It was a moving, we were talking, it was 2 hours essentially of conversation, and it was honest and it was unfiltered. And you can see each player really taking their time to express themselves. And I thought what was most striking, and Akeem Hicks really got to this, was they felt they could express themselves without fear of any repercussion. And I think that the tone that was set with that team meeting gave them that, you know, because these guys have generally felt comfortable tweeting about current events and feeling comfortable doing that. But, you know, when it came to talking to us and getting those kind of comments out there, you know, there could have been some reticence. There could have been some nervousness about what's okay. What does the team want us to say? And obviously, an environment's been, you know, created where it's okay for them to tell us, you know, what it's been like to be a young black man in America right now. And I appreciate that. You know, whatever was done with that meeting Monday, you know, I selfishly, as a reporter, and I think hopefully fans and people all around who see it, can appreciate that whatever was done that day allowed these guys to all feel an extreme level of comfort to talk about very emotional and very honest things.
It started with George McCaskey's official statement that he put his name on. It wasn't just some bland brand statement from the Chicago Bears. I thought among various team statements, the fact that the George McCaskey did it the way he did it set the right tone, and he should be proud of that.
I agree, Dan. You know, he the first sentence right off the bat, describing exactly what happened in Minneapolis, I think, instead of using these general vague terms, I mean, just not beating around the bush. And I think, you know, you and I both know that this is a franchise that tries to, that has in the past tried to avoid any controversy. I mean, heck, Dan, I talked to you in December. We were talking about Colin Kaepernick, and I was like, look, just the way this franchise is, it's just, they just wouldn't bring him in, even if they agree with him. It's just something they don't want to deal with. And I don't want to necessarily get on a, well, would they now? But what I mean by that is that since 2018, you know, they were the first team to create a social justice committee in the league with their players. They were the first team that, you know, the players came together and, you know, create a pot of $800,000. They listed, these are the five local organizations we're going to work with. I reached out to somebody in the organization this week and I said, I'm almost embarrassed that I didn't know about My Block, My Hood, My City until it was the Bears who brought them to my attention and what a great organization that is. And they've been doing some really important work for a long time, especially this week. So, you know, when we talk about how it can't just be words, it's got to be action, I think that we can take some, you know, have some confidence that this team already has relationships with these organizations. This team's already had really important conversations. They had it last year with the 1936 uniforms. And after the Jack Silverstein's research and reporting on that, George McCaskey went out and he responded, he made a statement, and they had a very open conversation with the team. So over the last couple seasons, they've done a good job of creating these platforms and allowing these people to speak and giving themselves an opportunity to not just speak with platitudes, actually showing us, hey, we do know how we can try to help and try to make a difference, not just with a statement.
And it wasn't just the security in being able to speak about social issues without public backlash. Something else happened that you don't usually hear an NFL player on a roster say. And it drew some headlines. And then there was some backlash to the headlines because it was taking away attention from more important things. And that whole the fact that Akeem Hicks was talking about the fact that not only could Colin Kaepernick not get a job, he said, we signed Mike Glennon. He said that. He said, we signed Mike Glennon. So say what you want about him, you know, pulling Glennon's card there. That is a not so indirect criticism of his own current general manager's football decision. That was astonishing to hear.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you should have seen the if you had your Zoom up in gallery view. By the way, I love it. This is the way we talk now, of course. But if you had that and you saw the 25 reporters' faces when that was kind of uttered at the as almost a throwaway line at the end of an answer, and I'm glad it was circled back to he can kind of confirm it. But yeah, you know, and he wasn't afraid to say it. And I think, look, when you're Akeem Hicks, you're not, you know, you do have a bit of cachet, obviously, but still, you just do not see that around the league for someone to go ahead and make that kind of comment. But yeah, you know, yesterday and this entire week, these guys have just been able to be unfiltered and just be honest about what has gone on. And you know, the bringing up Mike Glennon, while the line and the quip is fun for one-liners, and there were some pretty funny tweets about it, and I get it, the origin of it, why he got to that, is what's important, because it got to that after talking about Colin Kaepernick and looking at, you know, their own quarterback situation from a few years ago.
Yeah, that was, you know, and I guess the significance of Akeem Hicks is also part of the story here. When you talk about cachet, we've heard multiple times now people mention after the fact, even though at the time it's next man up, we like our depth of the position. He's an immensely important Chicago Bear in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he is. I mean, on the field, you saw the pass rush production is directly correlated with his injury that happened in London. Everything went down and the whole front seven just looked different. You know, and he's a powerful voice in that locker room. And he's somebody that, you know, is kind of the type of guy that talks to everybody, in there. So it was, yeah, that he is a massive force both on and off the field within that organization. And kind of the other ironic thing, going back to the Glennon comment, is you could argue that Akeem Hicks is the best decision that Ryan Pace has made, as general manager, certainly in free agency. So, you know, and then he's able to kind of talk about what was probably the worst one.
This year is my year.
The role of Matt Nagy too, that we're continuing to see how he responds, much as we're discussing what the hell Sean Payton is going to try to do today in New Orleans, as we talked to your compatriot Cat Terrell just before you came on, seeing what the job that he has in front of him today. But it may also speak to the steady hand of Matt Nagy that, and I think you've made this point too, that his head coaching job, forget the intricacies of game planning, play calling, because that's a different aspect, that his job as a head coach has been pretty good, even through last year, keeping the team together, seeing a team that to hear us talk about it week to week, you'd think the team was 4-12. And they end up at level water at 8-8. Is this further example the way the team is reacting, the way they feel, the way that the message from the top is then carried to the team and the tone is set, even as they're all doing this remotely, that this is another way that Nagy is solidifying himself as a trusted head coach?
It is. And of course, because you know how Bears fans can sometimes be, I immediately got some tweets yesterday that says, well, why can't he be a better play caller? And I get it. You know, like when we talk about last season, when we talk about how important it was that he kept them together, you can also say it was a failure for the team to go 8-8 and make the playoffs. So you're able to have those thoughts at the same time. But he, you know, there was never a situation where you thought that Matt Nagy had lost the locker room. This is somebody that has an extremely respected there. He is very good at reaching these players. He's been very creative in these Zoom calls, you know, with the speakers and all the different things he's doing. And then just what he did this week to really get out ahead of this. And the fact that, you know, the thing that was most striking to me yesterday was Akeem Hicks kind of admitting that he was not excited for that Monday session. And obviously Matt Nagy created a situation that allowed him and Dane Trevathan and Al Robinson, and we saw tweets from a lot of the players later in the day on Monday, and we didn't find out till Monday night what they were referring to. A lot of them were moved by the environment that Matt Nagy created. Now, he's ultimately going to be judged on wins and losses. But when you talk about a team that needs to stay together, that can't, that can't afford to go off the rails, they have the right guy in charge to make sure that. And I also should point out with Ryan Pace too, because you have to have the right guys in that Zoom meeting to conduct that conversation. And I think since he's gotten here in 2015, for the most part, they've brought in players that, you know, have been able, that have allowed for those types of conversations to be had comfortably.
So they decided to call off the meetings today. There was supposed to be more media availability today, but then that was supposed to be the quarterbacks, I believe. Why did they make the change?
Yeah, I think there was it's been such an emotional week. And I think they kind of want, you know, it's been an emotional week for them outside of talking to the media, just all the conversations they had. Because remember, one of the things Matt Nagy said yesterday was at least 40 people talked, but they didn't have time for other people to talk. So they started, so they took Tuesday off. Wednesday's meetings began with, how is everyone doing? Today's meetings are going to begin with, let's continue the conversation. So they're not allotting the whole 2 hours. So I do think there was a bit of a, we're going to give our two quarterbacks a break. And I don't know this for sure, Dan, but if I was, you know, looking at this from my perspective, I would say, hey, you had three black players who gave very powerful statements in what is going to be a week that is going to be remembered in history. Let's let those three guys be our voices, and we could talk about the quarterback competition next week, because they're not practicing. It's not like anything's going to change between today and next week. So as much as I think everyone's waiting to hear from Mitch Trubisky for the first time, and, you know, we want to catch up with Nick Foles and all that stuff, I do understand, if that was also part of the reasoning, the idea of, let's go ahead and push this back a week and just kind of let it just be these three guys.
Before we let you go, where are the Bears on the path to reconvening at some point? When will the facility be available? Is there a timeline as to when they could begin practicing?
Yeah, so they have not given us any information yet about that, about Hallis Hall opening. I believe the latest NFL edict is, later in June. They have these different phases in terms of when you can start having X amount of people at the facility. They might be in a phase right now where you can have a couple people that are there. In terms of having the full team there, Dan, I really don't know. I've been under the assumption that you're not going to see the full team there until late July at the earliest. There has been talk around the league about, they would love to get a mini camp in, but the players are not going to agree to a late June mini camp. That's just not something they're going to want to do. So the idea of them showing up at Hallis in 2 weeks is just beyond me. I just don't necessarily see that happening. So I'm operating on the assumption that the earliest these guys would all be in the building together is going to be late July. And of course, none of us know if we can even count on that.
Kevin Fishbane, thank you as always. Good health to you.
Thank you. You as well, Dan.
That is Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic. And we just spent a lot of time talking about what was said, talking about Akeem Hicks and Danny Trevathan. We've heard little bits and pieces. I think the best thing we can do next is let you hear Akeem Hicks, his statements, him answering questions, him talking from the heart. Really important guy on the Chicago Bears, a really thoughtful and interesting athlete. And he had a lot to say yesterday. We're going to listen to it in its entirety. You'll hear from Akeem Hicks of the Bears coming up next on The Score. You're going to hear from Akeem Hicks in just a moment, but there's a little NFL news. It's funny, coming just on the heels of the question that I just asked Kevin Fishbane here on Sports Radio 670. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network said that NFL teams have just received a memo saying beginning tomorrow, June 5th, coaching staffs may be among the employees returning to your facility. As has been emphasized in previous advice on reopening facilities, this may occur only if your club has otherwise received necessary permission from state and local governments to reopen its facility. As stated in the memo of May 28th, members of the coaching staff will count toward the maximum number of permissible club employees in the facility. Beginning tomorrow, clubs may increase the number of employees in the facility to a total of 100. Subject, again, to state and local regulation and implementation of protocols developed under the leadership of Dr. Sills. That's the NFL's advisor. It says coaches and other football staff, particularly those who may be in a higher risk category who have concerns about their own health conditions, are expected to speak with a club medical staff or personal physician about special precautions or other accommodations. Say we'll work with club medical staffs to implement a program of COVID-19 testing for the coaching staff and other football personnel prior to players returning to club facilities. But that's big news that they're letting coaches back in the building. Also a bit of baseball news here from Bruce Levine of The Score on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. It says all MLB announcers, TV and radio, have been told they will be doing 2020 road games from a local broadcast studio or home ballpark with monitors as their guide. I think we expected that, but that's the first time that we have seen that actual news. So, keeping up to date, updated on everything that is going on. Yesterday, Akeem Hicks was one of the Chicago Bears who met with media. And he started by answering a question about what his thoughts were when Colin Kaepernick began kneeling in protest during the national anthem.
I can't take anything back. And I had the same at that time. When Kaepernick was taking the knee, I had the same thought that 85, 90% of the league felt at that moment. If I get down on one knee in front of this stadium, I am fired. My job, my career, my life is over. I'll be blackballed. And then to come out on the other end and watch it actually happen to Kaepernick, it just tells me that my feelings were real. It's it was the reality, and hopefully it won't be going forward. Now, as far as my team, how do I feel about my team not working them out? We got enough stuff to figure out other than bringing, other people in and dealing with other situations. What I will say is this, though, as far as Kaepernick is concerned, it's not a Chicago problem. It's an entire league problem. There's 31 other teams that, I don't know who's worked them out and who's brought them in, but I'll say this. It doesn't start in Chicago. I do wonder, hold on, let me continue that thought, though. Let's say that his career is past him, right? How do we rectify that situation? How do we make it better? because we all, I'm sure everybody, I can't speak for everybody on this call, but we've seen what's happened in the sport. We've seen how he's been pushed to the side. I wonder if they're going to rectify that situation. I wonder if they're going to make it better for everyone, including him.
I just wanted to follow up on what you had said about with Colin Kaepernick, how to make things better. How could the league make things better with him, do you think? What specifically could they do other than obviously a team signing him?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if he gets a job. I wonder if now they say, hey, we need to bring you back in. We've seen the injustice. We've seen the wrong that we, you know, the situation that we've put you in, right? And we want to fix it. Now, is it signing him back? Is it giving him a position in the league to maybe he works on some of the social justice committees? Maybe he is involved in a greater role, right, to make sure that we don't have these instances again. I can't speak to how to fix the situation. All I would say is this. We saw it, right? We watched how it unfolded, and we see that he doesn't have a job now. And this call isn't to advocate, you know, Cap getting a job, but I will say that he did sacrifice his position for where he is now. He is in a tough spot, but I will say this. He has been his career was ended because of it, in my opinion.
Cam Ellis, go ahead.
Yeah. You signed Mike Lennon.
Sort of on that topic, talking with Alan this morning, he said he sort of could see a world where more athletes are kneeling next year. I wonder if you sort of think that'll be the case as well, and if you've sort of personally considered that option again.
One more time, please.
I've been talking with Alan this morning. He said he could see more athletes kneeling next season, and I'm wondering if you sort of feel the same way, whether you thought about that, and sort of personally if you considered that at all since.
I haven't thought about it. I really haven't considered it, but would I do I see it being a possibility? It could be. I guess in my mind, I want another step, right? I want to see something bigger, different, that already turned out negatively, and we understood what he meant by it. But I will say this, we got to – let's just make the situation better. I'll choose change over having to take another knee. I'd rather we just move on.
Yeah, Akeem, you do have that platform on the Social Justice Committee with the organization. Is that something that now becomes closer to the front burner for you, and is it something that requires recruiting other teammates to become more involved in these types of things so it's not just a gesture on game days?
The beautiful thing about our Social Justice Committee was that it was built, right, by the players. I feel that we've already been hands-on, raised close to $1 million in one season and donated to charities, right, across Chicago, Hands of Hope, Kicks for the City. We do things, Boys and Girls Club, we work with the city already. And I think that our personnel does a really good job. Soup Campbell, right, he does a really good job of making sure that when guys come into the city, they know that, you know, we're not just football players. We are a part of this community. And that starts at the top with Mr. McCaskey, right? Everybody is involved in making sure that, you know, we're giving back and we're putting our best foot forward in that category. So I don't think that, we need to put an extra emphasis on it because it's already at the forefront of what the organization is about. Bears Care, right? Long before I became a part of this team. Right, we have things in place to make sure that we're affecting change in our communities.
Hey, Akeem, thank you so much. Hey. It's so good to see you.
Good to see you too.
The quarantining beard is on point.
it's too much.
It's good. Hey, what types of actions specifically have you as players, not the staff, but you as players, talked about maybe just here in Chicago that you could take? And then my second question for you, if that's okay. And I hesitate to use the word censored, but how censored now, given what you shared about the past, do you feel you have to be as an NFL player and an African-American man?
I feel like I've been censored my whole life. So for me to feel like I have to keep people at ease, to make sure that there's a calm, you know, while I'm in the room, those are natural things to me. And, you know, these things were taught to me in a way, right? Because at an early age, being not just a larger kid, but a larger black kid. I was seen as a, you know, the antagonist in a lot of situations. I was seen as the bully. I was seen as a person that, you know, just not in the best light, right? And developing my mindset going forward, I understood always that I had to make other people feel comfortable before myself. And I'm going to continue to do that. I'm going to continue to make sure people feel comfortable around me. And is it unfortunate that I have to live that way? Call it what you want, right? But I do it because that's how I'm able to move through society and have people feel okay with me. Anyway, moving forward. What was the other question?
Just the action specifically that you players could present with the platform that you have and that we could all jump on board with.
I think everybody right now is in a place of I think everybody right now is in a place of hurt in some instances, especially what I saw on the call the other day, right? Not the best feelings or emotions. And I think that was one of the benefits of Coach having that call, is it gave us a place where we wouldn't be judged by society to speak on how we felt, right? And so I don't think anybody has made any plans or ready to move on anything. What we're looking at right now is just having a better understanding, right? Keeping guys who may be frustrated or hurt by the things that have transpired in the past weeks, keeping them focused and making sure that we're going in the right direction as far as a team, and taking care of the person first. I think that's what our organization is doing, is taking care of the person, making sure that everybody is in a good state to go forward.
Do you think that Kaepernick, had he not protested, would have gotten a starting job and a big contract and all of that? You said we signed Mike Glennon, you know?
You heard that, eh? I said that. Yeah, it was a feeling. I mean, do I think that Kaepernick is going to would have gotten a good deal? Do I think he would have gotten a good deal if he had not protested? Can't say. I couldn't even begin to speak to that. Do I know that he came to New Orleans when I played for New Orleans and played some really good football against us, won a game at the end of the game, like a fourth quarter, 60-yard bomb, touchdown. You remember all your scars. What I'll say is that did he take his team to a Super Bowl? Does he have all the qualifications that we seem to be looking for in NFL quarterbacks these days? Athletic, can get the ball down the field. You know what I'm saying? I think that he fits a lot of those categories. Do I know if he would have gotten a huge deal and been going on to be a Hall of Fame quarterback? I don't know these things. I just know that when he took a knee, he was silenced, or they attempted to silence him.
Akeem, it struck me that on this call, everyone who's asked you a question has been of one ethnicity. And after the call, we're all going to go right about what you said, but none of us on this call could possibly understand your emotions, what you've been going through the last however long it's been. So how are you doing?
Thank you for asking that. I appreciate that. It is pretty interesting. It is a really interesting thing to be on this call. And as I swipe through, I don't see one face that looks like mine. Right? But what I do see is a lot of people that I have interactions with on a daily basis that have treated me with respect, have been honest, right? Have worked with me on a lot of the things that I've done over my 4 years here. And so what I'll say is this, racism doesn't exist in every situation, right? Have I experienced it or encountered it in my 30 years on this planet? A lot of times, right? But I can't live my life or do my job if the first thing on my mind is this person doesn't like me because of the color of my skin. Now, do I experience it? Do I ever feel it? Yes. But I have to interact with every single one of you.
Akeem Hicks of the Chicago Bears, and so much in there. There's so much real emotion. There's so much to take away from that. And there's part of it that really resonates with me, and that is how for his entire life, he has borne the responsibility of trying to make other people not fear him or not be uncomfortable around him. And it's something that I keep hearing as a thread as we're listening to people tell their stories. Our own Herb Lawrence, who on Joe Ostrowski's show, Joe sort of let Herb and Tony Gill talk about their experiences. And I was listening to Herb talk. I was in the car a couple days ago when Danny Parkins and Dan McNeil replayed that chunk of what he said. And Herb Lawrence himself, it's Herb, one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet in your life. And he said that because I'm a 300-pound black man whose resting facial expression can sometimes look unhappy, he says, I have to go out of my way to make people feel comfortable around me, to not project an image that people see. Think about that. I mean, really, really think about the burden of just existing, of just what you have to do to exist comfortably, because you feel, because our unspoken rules of society have put it on you. It's your job to make people more comfortable around you because of the color of your skin and how you look. That's what Akeem Hicks was saying there. And that, I mean, the burden of that, the unfairness of that burden is in large part what we're talking about. You'll hear from Danny Trevathan a little bit later on. He also had some emotional commentary yesterday on that Zoom conference call that ostensibly was going to be about football, going to be about virtual OTAs, but it's become something much, much more important. That cannot be said, however, about the midday midway that is coming up next. I have a couple of really dumb criminals, and I have a story that I can't even begin to explain to you. All I can tell you, it's about a Spanish porn star and licking a toad. Not a toe, a toad. I'll tell you more when we come back. The Midday Midway is straight ahead on The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
We began this show today as we reach the midday midway point where we let you know what we have been talking about, and it was Drew Brees. It was the major mistake. Well, not really. I don't want to call it a mistake. It was the unfortunate comments that Drew Brees made yesterday about Colin Kaepernick still continuing to willfully misunderstand what his protest was and is in a way that touched a nerve that really caused some outrage among his teammates. And Malcolm Jenkins was angry. Hall of Fame safety Ed Reed weighed in. It was too bad for Drew Brees to have said what he said, to get the facts so wrong and to completely misunderstand what's going on in the moment as it's going on, to make himself an example, the example of everything that is being protested, specifically the lack of effort to understand, the lack of empathy, the lack of awareness. And he made himself just a perfect avatar for exactly what's wrong. He put out an apology, an incomplete apology, as they so often are this morning. And the Saints are meeting at the moment in a previously scheduled team meeting. We got some really strong perspective from Catherine Terrell of The Athletic in New Orleans, talking about the backdrop of that particular city, of what the Saints mean, of what Drew Brees means, and what other players on that team have done, and what needs to be done now by Sean Payton to bring them together. Kevin Fishbane gave us details on the Bears Zoom teleconference yesterday, and then we heard at length from an emotional Akeem Hicks. We'll hear from Danny Trevathan a little bit later on in the show as well. Also mentioned that football teams, NFL teams, are now allowed to have the coaching staff back in their buildings. And the Score's Bruce Levine reported that MLB broadcast crews, if and when there are games, will be doing road games from their home park or from some other broadcast location, calling the game off a monitor. One thing that's noticeable in the current unrest is that unrest like this brings out fringe elements of various kinds. And without even ascribing political affiliation, there are genuinely unstable people who are looking at opportunities to foment chaos. Genuine anarchists who are probably unwell. And a couple of them are from Illinois, and a couple of them were caught committing crimes because of unique physical features. And I guess I would file this under, if you have really unique identifiable physical features, and why you choose to do that is up to you, it's probably best to avoid committing obvious crimes in public, because you get kind of easy to catch. But one of those people is Matthew Lee Rupert. He's 28 years old, and he was caught passing out homemade explosives in Minneapolis. And he mentioned that he went to Minneapolis from Illinois just so he could riot. And this is what we're talking about. Galesburg, Illinois' Matthew Lee Rupert was charged with civil disorder, carrying on a riot, and possession of unregistered destructive devices. And they tracked him down because of what they described as distinctive gold teeth. And I'm looking at his mugshot, and indeed, many of the teeth in his mouth, not all of them, it's not a grill, he just has several distinctive gold teeth that would allow him, somebody to say, yeah, I think that's probably the same guy. And he's not the only one, because you remember the images of the police SUV in Chicago that was on fire? Well, there is actually a videotape of a man wearing a Joker mask in a jean jacket placing a lit object into the gas tank of a police car in the 200 block of North State Street. That man's name is Timothy O'Donnell. He's 31. He is wearing a Joker mask, like a Halloween-style mask with like just a rubber band around the back. And he's got the Joker mask on. He's putting a lit object into the gas tank of the SUV. The car burned, and he was arrested on a federal arson charge, according to the Department of Justice, punishable by a minimum sentence of 5 years in prison and a maximum of 20 years. They were able to track O'Donnell down in part because of his distinctive neck tattoo. He has the word pretty, P-R-E-T-T-Y, ironically enough to look at him, is printed right underneath his Adam's apple across his neck. And there is a perfectly clear picture of him in the clown mask, walking away with his hand in the cookie jar. You can see his pretty is written on his neck. He's got the Joker mask on, and he is putting something into the gas tank of an already spray-painted police SUV. So the FBI special agent handling the investigation said they reviewed the video, and they saw the tattoo, and authorities executed a search warrant on his home, and they found the mask in his bedroom. And he waived his right to remain silent. He admitted he was the one wearing the mask in the photos. Because I think that's probably beyond coincidence. If they go to the bedroom and they find the mask and you're the guy that has the very same distinctive neck tattoo, he also has tattoos going from his lower lip all the way down his chin. So there is an element out there. It's like the guy that was the breaking 80 windows at a grade school out in the suburbs somewhere, who apparently had a reputation for having some unstable mental issues. That there is a fringe element around here that is out and about in ways that's just opportunistic because they're agents of chaos. Here's a lead for you. A porn star has been arrested on manslaughter charges following a man's death during a mystic ritual in which he inhaled psychedelic toad venom, according to Spanish police on Wednesday. This in Madrid. Nacho Vidal, that's the porn star, Nacho Vidal was detained last week in the southeastern Valencia region in connection with the death of a man in July of 2019. Media identified the victim as fashion photographer Jose Luis Abad. Police operation began following the victim's death during the celebration of a mystic ritual based on the inhalation of venom from the Bufo alvarius toad. The toad, a rare species which is native to the Sonoran Desert that stretches from northern Mexico into California and Arizona, secretes venom containing a very powerful natural psychedelic substance known as 5-MeO-DMT. Oh, it's DMT. Its effects have been compared to ayahuasca, a powerful hallucinogenic concoction from the Amazon consumed as part of a shamanic ritual. Yeah, DMT is the substance that is secreted by the pineal gland like immediately before you die. And that's why these stories of people who have shared their near-death experience talk about having the interactions with aliens or going into space, and it's all because of the release of DMT that has now been synthesized also. And there are doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists who are using DMT in therapies with cancer patients and with people in psychedelic treatments, and apparently to some positive effect about not just garden variety anxieties, but people who are facing terminal diagnoses, etc., that there's something to be said about some of these drugs, in truth. But following an 11-month inquiry, police arrested Vidal, one of his relatives, and an employee on suspicion of manslaughter and crimes against public health. They had discovered such rituals are being carried on regularly on offering medicinal benefits. But see, this has to be administered by a doctor to have any medicinal benefits. They said this apparently harmless ancestral ritual posed a serious health risk, luring people who are easily influenced, vulnerable, or who are seeking help for illnesses or addictions with alternative methods. Local press said the ceremony took place in the country residence of Vidal, a media-savvy porn star in his mid-40s. This is a great lead, great kicker. His Twitter feed is full of ads for his 25-centimeter aromatic candles of the male genitalia, available in black, white, or bright cherry red. Aromatic candles of the male genitalia, 25 centimeters, that's about 10 inches, right? Aerosmith, right? It's about, I think, because 33 centimeters is maybe less than, maybe 8. I don't know. My math is bad, but this is not the lead that you usually would expect to see of a porn star arrested for manslaughter. But they're saying the guy inhaled the psychedelic toad venom. Is that what killed him? Because I thought, is this the same as the cane toad? Because that was in Florida. Do we have two separate types of hallucinogenic toad venom that we're dealing with here? Because I remember there was for a while there was the cane toad. People were getting high by licking that, but I thought that was in the southeast. That this may be a different one if this is in the Sonoran Desert, where it's southwest, and this is specifically DMT, and they're inhaling it. I don't know. We will have to get to the bottom of it at another time, in another place perhaps, than the midday midway. But that is what this has been. Ian Happ is going to join us, as he does every Thursday. It does appear from listening to the most recent podcast that the compound may be getting ready to pull up stakes there. As they were saying, it might have been their last podcast from there in Arizona because, well, maybe there's going to be a spring training of some kind at some point. We know that the baseball the two conflicting sides are at least kind of not talking, non-negotiating. And I've always followed Eugene Friedman for some of this stuff. Don't follow reporters necessarily. It's best to follow a labor lawyer, as he understands what some of these terms mean when they say impasse that isn't really an impasse. There does seem to be hope. I'm going to remain optimistic until otherwise that there will be some baseball coming up. So we'll talk baseball. We'll talk a little bit of golf. Apparently, Ian Happ just went out and shot a 69 the other day. His playing partner did a little bit better than that. And we'll talk to him about that and some baseball stuff. It is all coming your way. Ian Happ makes his regular Thursday appearance here on The Score.